My friends, now we proceed to the next chapter, preparing for buying decisions. So what are the preparations that are required to be done by the retailer before he can make decisions related to buying? The learning objectives of this chapter are understanding the importance of market research in the retail sector. So that is the first preparation that the retailer needs to undertake, which is extensive market research. The next is to know sources of information for market research. The next learning objective is to comprehend need for the retailers to understand the consumer. In order to understand the consumer, the retailer needs to learn the consumer decision-making process, the various factors that influence the consumer decision-making process, and lastly, the process of sales forecasting and making merchandise budgets. Market research. What do we understand by this term? It is the objective and formal process of collecting information, analyzing this information and communicating the findings and their implications in terms of marketing actions. The term objective over here means that the data collected or the method of collecting data has to be unbiased. It cannot be subjective. It has to be objective so that the retailer is able to make decisions that are fruitful and that prove to be successful. It is the formal process of collecting information. There are some informal ways also of collecting information. When we go to a store, let's say I have to buy a sari. So I go to a store and the salesperson is going to show me a number of saris. Now, my friend and I are discussing each product. What do we say? Oh, this color is not nice. Oh, I don't like this print, or the fabric is not good. So these kind of comments, which are made informally, are picked up by the salespeople. And then these can be used for decision making by the retailer. But this is an informal method of collecting market research data. So here, when we are referring to market research for retailing, we are essentially referring to formal methods of collecting data. This data is then analyzed and collated. The results are then discussed, even processed statistically, and then this is communicated to the marketing team, who then make decisions, make plans, strategies based on the data collected. Therefore, market research in retail is extremely crucial for the survival of the retailer. Let us now talk about the importance of market research for a retailer. It provides factual data. So data that is full of facts and figures, and not so that the data is quantitative, not only qualitative. Data which is based on facts. This data will maximize effectiveness of the retail marketing plans, drive sales and increase ROI, return on investment of the retailer. Market research can also help explore new product ideas, new marketing ideas, new branding. It can help in innovation. Market research will also help understand how target customer is evolving and changing, and therefore help in developing strategies to retain these dynamic consumers. How do we do market research? From where do we get all this information and convert it into data? A wide array of sources to gather data before proceeding decision making. Like we just discussed, the sales personnel or the sales team is the most trustworthy source of information since they interact closely with the consumers. This information can be the starting point of a good market research program. The customer's comments and feedback is an analysis of this feedback and suggestions helps the retailer understand the consumers better and make relevant changes to their retail mix and marketing strategies. Most restaurants nowadays have a feedback form. This is how they are collecting data from the customer. Usually these feedback forms also have a suggestions column. Suppliers of the retailer are another very important source of market research data. They are reliable and valuable source of information, especially since they have market knowledge also. They have a good idea of what is being produced, what is being ordered by the competitors. So a supplier may be supplying the same or similar product category to a number of retailers. So if you talk to them, you will get an idea of what they are supplying to a competitor, and you can use that information. Various magazines and trade publications give data on market trends, new products, new raw materials, developments, innovations, new variants, new versions, new colors. Trade associations publish industry data and statistics. They even compile a list of all members or participants and their product ranges. Buying offices are also working on behalf of the retailer. So this is another good source of information in the host country. We know that buying offices are usually used for sourcing from different countries, and therefore, since the retailer does not understand completely the host country, they can use the buying office as a source of information, especially in finding new vendors and new suppliers. Internal sources, which means sources within the retail organization itself, for example, past marketing activities, marketing strategies, how did they impact the sales, which were good sales, what were the best sellers, which styles did not sell well, or these are can be collected from internal sources. Next segment is understanding the retail customer. Every retailer aims to be successful. Obviously, the bottom line is money. So in order to be successful, the retailer has to dissect the current market, uncovering how their customers think, in order to proactively market and sell their products. Thus, the customer has to be well understood by the retailer. It is not possible to completely understand human behavior. Don't we all agree? The retailer should therefore try and achieve the maximum possible understanding of his target consumer base. What is the need to study consumer behavior? Why do retailers need to understand consumer behavior? Firstly, to stay in the business by attracting and retaining customers. We all know it is more difficult to retain customers, especially in today's world where everything is available online, all information, price comparisons, everything can be done online. So it is very difficult to retain customers. But having said that, we also know that it is easier to retain customers than to attract more new customers. The retailer has to do both simultaneously in order to grow, which means he has to keep growing his customer base and he has to keep growing the loyal customer base. Need for consumer behavior, study of consumer behavior is to benefit from understanding the problems that the consumer faces. That is where feedbacks and suggestions from the customer are taken. The retailer has to offer a differentiated product. If all retailers are offering the same product category, there is going to be huge competition. So in order to offer a differentiated product to the consumer, a retailer needs to undertake market research to know what is it that the consumer wants. In order to establish a competitive advantage, the retailer has to study consumer behavior. It also helps the retailer to reduce risk by using better marketing plans, retail strategies, retail mix. Everything can be planned based on an understanding of the target customer. Research and understanding of consumer behavior also helps retailer to understand how to manipulate those factors that influence consumer behavior and consumer purchase behavior. What is it that the consumer thinks when he's buying a product? What are the factors that affect consumer buying decision? If the retailer understands all this, then he can tailor his marketing mix and retail plans to suit the consumer. Now we go on to the next segment of this chapter. We all know that India is changing. The Indian economy, the Indian consumer is in transition. Why? We need to understand why is there this transition and how is it impacting the retail sector. The opening up and expansion of Indian economy, rise in incomes, rise in disposable incomes, and changing consumer beliefs and behavior have led to an increase in consumption. We know consumerism is increasing, materialism is increasing, the Indian consumer is undergoing huge changes. In order to sell to this changing Indian consumer, the retailer also has to keep changing to suit the consumer's requirements. We all know India ranks second amongst the top 30 emerging markets in the world. Now we want to understand what are the reasons for the rapid and significant change in the Indian consumer today. Media explosion and use of internet. Everybody is on the internet. Everybody is on the mobile phone. Selling and buying is happening through the mobile phone. Today, when I call a cycle wala to come and repair my son's cycle, he does so through his phone, his mobile phone. You just have to call him and he will come to your house. Your number, your name, your house number is all saved on his phone. That is the level of service even a cycle wala is giving nowadays. Okay, so this is all due to increased technology usage. Urbanization of rural areas. More and more rural areas are becoming urban. People are becoming more educated and more aware thanks to the internet. Increase in number of working women has had many implications on the changing consumerism. Dual income households have a different pattern of spending and a different pattern of buying. Their shopping basket has changed. Nuclear families. Today, households are becoming less traditional. They are spending more per capita. India has a young earning population. The 50% of India's population is in the age group of 25 to 35 years. That means there is a huge population out there buying a lot of products. The increased use of credit cards has led to the emergence of online shopping. Now, Indians are not so skeptical about using credit cards to purchase online, which was there a few years back. Increase in disposable income, increase in the middle class has made Indians more materialistic. They are more into buying things. There is more of consumerism which is on the rise. All these factors together have combined to affect a drastic change in the shopping basket of the consumer in India. Let's look at a graph. This is India's annual per capita disposable income and consumer expenditure. This graph shows the changes from 2005 to 2010. So we have the annual disposable income in purple and we have the consumer expenditure in orange. Okay. Here on the x-axis are the years, so 2005, 6, 7, 8, 9 and 10. And on the y-axis we have the per capita disposable income in rupees. Now, as is evident from this graph, you can see there is a steady increase in the per capita disposable income as well as the consumer expenditure. Both are increasing. This is where the consumer is changing, because not only are they earning more, they are spending more. Indians by nature are not big spenders, but now there is a huge change and people are spending much more. In the next segment, we are going to understand the consumer decision-making process. Consumer behavior or decision-making process is the process involved when individuals or groups select, use or dispose of products or services to satisfy needs and desires. What is it that the consumer thinks when he is making a purchase decision? What does the consumer think before he makes a purchase decision? What are the factors which influence his purchase make decision? How can we change his perception of a brand or of a product? These are all aspects we are going to understand now. First, let us start with the steps that are involved in consumer decision-making process. The first step is need recognition, or we can also call it as problem recognition. When a consumer becomes aware of a need, a want, or a problem that can be satisfied by buying a product or a service, it is the need recognition phase. A need arises when the consumer runs out of stock of a product, or he wants to buy a new one because the existing one, the current one, is not meeting his expectations or is either outdated. This happens very often with products that use technology. The next step is pre-purchase information search, which essentially means gathering information before making the purchase decision to satisfy the need or problem that has already been recognized. The extent of information search depends on the current level of information and the perceived value of additional information, which means that how much information search should a consumer undertake? This can be in different levels. You could have a limited purchase research or limited purchase behavior, which means that if I have to buy a toothpaste, maybe I will not do so much of research. I am going to use memory and say, okay, I'm going to buy this brand. It is not a high involvement product. It is not an expensive product. If I do not like it, I can even throw that piece. That's fine. Okay. So that is one level of information research. Which the other level, the other extreme of the continuum could mean a extensive involvement product. For example, a car or a laptop or a mobile phone. Since this product is high involvement, high price, and could even be impacting my image or the perception people have of me, I would like to undertake a lot of research before I make a purchase decision. Before I finalize a brand, a version, a variant, I will ask a number of people. I will ask friends, family, I will check online, I will check with my colleagues, I will compare prices online, and only then will I make a purchase decision. The next step is evaluating the alternatives or various options that are available to the consumer. It consists of evaluating the various criteria or factors that affect the choice of one product over the other or one brand over the other. This evaluation can be impacted by a number of factors: product attributes, brand image, the price, or the convenience. These are factors that can influence the choice of a brand or product. Step 4 is the actual purchase of the product. Here, the final decision to buy a product or to not buy a product is made. A consumer may decide to not buy a product after extensive research also, okay, for various reasons. Salespeople, the convincing power of a salesperson, or the store atmospherics can influence the consumer to make a purchase decision. It can influence the consumer to purchase a competing brand or even an add-on of a complementary product. Step 5, the post-purchase evaluation. This is the most important phase of the consumer decision-making process. we can say, oh, the purchase is already made. So how does it matter what the consumer is going through? No, that's wrong. The post-purchase evaluation is the most important stage of the consumer purchase. This is where the marketing person can create a loyal customer from a first-time customer or a repeat customer. After the purchase is made, the consumer will start evaluating the product characteristics. He will start looking at how the product is performing and then justify the purchase decision. At this point, the retailer and his marketing team have to ensure that the customer feels he has made the right decision by buying this product. If the post-purchase stage is handled well by the marketing team, the customer can become a repeat customer and also a loyal customer. He can be a customer who goes and talks about your product and uses word of mouth publicity. Now let us understand the various factors that influence the decision making process. Cultural factors. These are set parameters of what is acceptable or not. Culture, values, do's and don'ts, these are specific to a region or a country, and these impact the way the consumer decides. Cultural factors influence mainly our choice of food, drinks, and apparel. So what is okay or acceptable for one culture may not be acceptable to another culture. The retailer needs to know the implications, he needs to know the cultures of various places that he is retailing in and change his marketing plans accordingly. Social factors like education, the occupation of the customer, the income levels, their way, lifestyle, all these are also important influencers of the consumer purchase behavior. Family is a unit of consumption. Different family members play different roles in the decision-making process. One family member, usually the husband or the father, may be a decision maker. Today, more and more women are becoming decision makers. One of the family members could be an influencer. For example, the children in the family are influencers. They influence the parents as to what kind of a phone to buy or what kind of a car to buy or what model of a tablet to buy. You could have a person playing gatekeeper in the information that is distributed or researched before making a purchase decision. So family is another very important aspect influencing the purchase behavior. Various psychological factors like motivation, perception, learning, beliefs and attitudes of the customer all affect the consumer decision-making process. So do personal factors like personality and lifestyle. Today, lifestyle factors are becoming extremely important. Let us look at this chart, which is depicting what we've just done in this last segment. The decision-making process, the five steps. First, problem recognition, information search. Next step is information evaluation, the final decision making, and post-purchase evaluation. Various factors that are going to influence, you can see these arrows going all around, all of them, all these factors or group of factors are influencing each other and impacting each other. So you could have a situational influence, which means socio-cultural, technological aspects, economic aspects, who are the competitors, how much competition is there, the various regulations or rules or government policies, the marketing mix. Obviously, that is going to impact the consumer decision making. Group influences, which could be social class, it could be the culture, it could be a family, it could be reference groups. You could have primary or secondary reference groups that influence the entire decision making process. Then you can have individual influences, which comprise of personality, perception, motivation, attitudes, learning, lifestyle. Now we move on to the next segment of this chapter, which is sales forecasting. What is a sales forecast? It is a projection of achievable sales revenue. So sales forecasting means we plan in advance what the revenue in terms of sales has to be for a certain time frame. Sales forecasting is the foundation of merchandise plans, and it includes elements like overall company projections, product category projections, store-wise projections, and item-wise projections. So it essentially means what and how much are we going to sell within each category of product, within each store, within each item that we are selling. So we are planning in advance how much we want to sell, and then we work backwards saying, in order to achieve this target revenue, I need to sell X number of pieces in Y number of product categories. A sales forecast can also be defined as a month-by-month estimate of the level of sales that are targeted for a specific period of time. What is the importance of a sales forecast? It serves as the starting point in the entire merchandise planning process. We are going to understand in the subsequent chapters what is merchandise planning, how do we go around doing a lot of merchandising maths, retail maths, to we work out numbers and find out how much to sell at one price to sell. So the sales forecast is a good starting point for this entire process of planning the merchandise assortments. It serves as a balance between expectations of the target customer and financial goals of the retailer. The sales forecast determines inventory levels of the product. It helps synchronize efforts between different functions of the retailer. So the buying team, the selling team, the marketing team, the PR team, the HR team, the finance team, everybody has the sales forecast in front of them, and they all work towards achieving these sales forecasts. Now let us understand how do we go about developing a sales forecast. Firstly, what are the various techniques? We could use two types of techniques for developing a sales forecast, which is a qualitative technique and a quantitative technique. A qualitative technique uses opinions of the customer and other entities of the supply chain. So, which are these other entities? It could be a supplier, it could be a vendor, it could be a raw material supplier, it could be a component supplier, it could be a trim supplier, it could be suppliers who are also supplying to competitors. So all these entities of the supply chain are reviewed. We collect their opinions on what the sales forecast would be like. It could be in terms of quality, it could be in terms of quantity, how many pieces can we sell, in what styles, what is the competitor making, etc. Then we can talk about a quantitative technique, which essentially relies on historical data and uses statistical methods to analyze the historical data and then say, based on this past sales trends, this is the amount of sales we will be able to make in the forthcoming time frame. How do we develop a sales forecast? First, we estimate the market demand. So how much is the demand of that product category or that brand in the market? And then we estimate the company demand. So what is market demand? It is the total volume that would be bought by a defined customer group in a defined geographical area, in a defined time period, and in a given marketing environment. So first step towards developing a sales forecast is to estimate the market demand. The next step is to determine the company demand, which is the company's market share of the market demand. After estimating the company demand, The next step is to develop the actual sales forecast. Now, this is where it gets a little difficult. Forecasting methods that are used will depend on the kind of product. We know the various kinds of product. It could be a staple or a basic product. It could be a fashion merchandise. It could be a seasonal product. Forecasting for these different product categories is going to be very different. For a staple or a basic product, which has relatively stable sales, stable demand, it is easier to forecast demand because the demand does not vary greatly over time. Therefore, continuous replenishment methods are used, generating replacement orders when the inventory level drops below a pre-decided inventory level. Okay? So, it is easier to forecast demand for a staple or a basic product. And second, a continuous replenishment method is used for a staple product. Fashion products, on the other hand, are a different ballgame altogether. They have less predictable demand due to frequent changes. Such products have a shorter lifespan. New products or features or variants are introduced continuously to push sales. Forecasting for fashion products, therefore, is extremely complex, challenging, and risky. What are the steps followed to develop a sales forecast? There are four steps we can broadly talk about. Step one is where we review the past sales records and data. So, anything that needs to be projected for the future has to start with the past. So we have to go back into our files, into our computer records and check what sold well in the past seasons, why did it sell well, what did not sell well, and why. Was the price not correct? Was the fabric not correct? Was the sizing not correct? Was the color not correct? Was there not enough assortment, enough variety or enough depth? There could be a host of reasons for a product selling well or not selling well. That is what needs to be done in the first step. The second step is where we consider market situation and the economic environment. Essentially, what we are doing at this stage is a pest or a pestle analysis, where we are looking at the political, economic, social situation, the technological situation of that country or that region, and then we base our marketing and retailing plans on that analysis. The next step is to consider the targets. What are the sales targets we have? What are the volume targets that we have? Accordingly, we will develop our sales forecast, which is the next step where we arrive at a sales forecast. Now we move on to the next segment, which is merchandise budgets. After you've done a forecast of the sales, we obviously have to talk about a budget. So for every forecast, you're going to have a budget. This is the money available to the retailer to achieve that sales forecast. So a budget is a tool for not only planning, but also controlling the investment in the inventory, so that the retailers can meet their sales goals. A budget outlines the retailer's planned expenses for a given time period based on the expected performance. So the budget and the sales forecasts or sales goals have to complement each other. Budgeting can help a company or a retailer use its limited finances and human resources in a manner which best exploits the existing business opportunities. We all know resources are always scarce, whether it is money, whether it is manpower, we have to optimally use them. So a merchandise budget is going to help the retailer optimally use his resources. Let us look at the various elements of a merchandise budget. We've already discussed past sales data. This is where we find out the sales that took place in a particular season or a particular year and extrapolate that information for a future projected time period. Planned sales is what we are planning to achieve in that time period. Then we talk about planned reductions. Now, this is a concept that you need to understand. What is planned reduction? Planned reduction means something that you know in advance that is going to reduce your inventory level. Planned reductions could be sales, it could be pilferage or theft, it could be shrinkage, it could also be employee discounts that are given to the employees of the retailer. So planned reductions can be a number of things combined, and they have to be made if the product does not sell well. The biggest component of planned reductions is markdowns. If the product is not selling well, then you need to offer the product at a certain discount. That is called a markdown. So how much markdown will you give, and so how will that reduce your inventory or your profits? Then we will talk of the planned purchase levels. This means how much quantity to purchase, what will be the time frame of these purchases, is it going to be a monthly or a fortnightly purchase, how much inventory should we have, how much stock should we have, so that the customer gets the variety, he gets to see the variety. There are many elements to this. So you need to plan your purchase and inventory in a manner that every time the customer walks into your store, he's seeing something different, something new that keeps him interested. At the same time, you cannot have too much of an inventory, otherwise you will end up with a lot of dead stock. What is the first price of that product? And you need to work out the first price of all the product categories that you are offering to your customer. What is the number of units that you are going to sell for each product category at this first price so as to achieve the planned sales? The gross margin or the overall profitability of the organization has to be achieved. Thus, all these aspects need to be carefully planned so that you are achieving your gross margins that you have planned. What are the various types of budgets? We could have a fixed or static budget. We could have a dynamic or a variable budget. These are obviously opposites. So a fixed or a static budget is one that cannot be changed during the specified time frame. It is appropriate for staple products that have relatively constant sales. So when you know that this is a staple product, the demand is not going to vary, the sales will be constant or similar every time frame, then you can have a fixed or a static budget. But what happens when you cannot predict the demand? You do not know what the sales would be like. So you use a dynamic or a variable budget, which is updated frequently to incorporate the changing trends. It is used for products that have varying sales volume, as it allows comparisons to be made over a period of time. We also have a zero-based budget. As the name suggests, it assumes no previous levels of sales. It starts from zero. It starts from scratch every time the new budget is made. So each budget is starting from scratch, and all costs have to be justified every time the budget is done. Now let us understand the various steps for developing a merchandise budget. First is the budgeting authority has to be decided and specified. Who is the person who is going to finalize the budget, who is going to approve the budget? That needs to be decided. The next step is the time frame. What is the time frame? Is it monthly? Is it weekly? Is it fortnightly? Is it biannual? What is the time frame of your budget? If mine is a a fashion product? Am I doing it every selling season? It is a staple product. It could be regular time intervals. So the time frame of the budget needs to be decided, which also translates into the budgeting frequency. Cost categories are established. Every product will have certain costs associated with it. It could be direct or indirect costs. It could be fixed or variable costs. So these categories have to be established so that you can develop a budget of various expenses. The level of detail is set. How detailed is the budget going to be? What information is the budget going to have? How big a chart or an Excel sheet is it going to be? All these details need to be pre-decided, and the budget flexibility has to be decided. How flexible is the budget? Once it has been decided and approved, closed by the budgeting authority, can we make changes to it? There are, especially for fashion products, last minute there is a change in the trend. Can we make changes in the budget? So how flexible is my budget? Am I keeping a 10% plus minus flex in the budget? Is that not allowed? How much flex to keep? All these aspects need to be decided before a budget is developed. Thank you.